And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine, Tuesday the 26th of November, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show. How are you all keeping? It's good to have you on board. Thank you so much for all your feedback and comments on our first debate yesterday of the final week of the general election campaign. If you missed yesterday's debate, by the way, and there was some, I think, interesting and telling exchanges contained within, it's available for you to podcast or watch back, in fact. You can go on to the playback section of our website and you'll see what's what there. Today we are having our second panel, and they are Charlie McConnellogue of Fianna Fáil, Padraig McLaughlin of Sinn Féin, Charles Ward of the 100% Redress Party, and Vincent J. Bradley, an independent. We invited, of course, Nikki Bradley of Fine Gael, and she was scheduled to take part but has withdrawn as she is meeting with outgoing Minister Helen McEntee. Carol Gallagher of People Before Profit was also invited, and she is unable to attend because of work commitments. That means, really effectively, isn't it one woman that we're going to hear from over three debates, is it? I think it is. Is it one woman? No? There's two. No, Nuala Carr of the Greens is in tomorrow. Okay, two, which is... two's better than one, right? But it's when you look at the county spread 50-50, and we've got three debates and two female participants, might help frame some of the conversations we're inevitably going to be having about women in politics and what have you. Do you know the way these conversations pop up from time to time? So anyway, obviously, there's lots of issues to discuss today. We're going to pick up pretty much where we left off yesterday. Obviously, there's a lot of conversation to be had as it relates to defective blocks and housing, immigration, and those having to emigrate. It's also going to be their health, cost of living, and what have you. And I was interested listening to, and there's a bit of an irony in me in saying this, but you know, we can stand on our record, and we're going to continue conversation over the week. I was listening to an RTE report this morning on Donegal, and cost of living wasn't one of the biggest issues, and neither was defective concrete. I think I only heard one person reference that in the whole Vox Pop. The rest was housing and health. So I'm not sure if RTE, if their finger on the pulse, or if it misrepresents what the big issues are of the day here in Donegal. People can make up their own minds on that. Right, we want you involved in the conversation, by the way, just in relation to all of you who messaged in yesterday and texted in and commented in. I am not exaggerating when I say we had hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of messages. And as we were going yesterday during the debates, in some of the questions, I tried to include the points of view that were being made. Yeah, but I just simply did not have the time. We've less panellists today, so that'll afford us a little bit more time. So we look forward to that. But thanks for all the positive feedback on yesterday's first debate. But also thank you very much for the negative feedback as well. We didn't get much of it, don't get me wrong, but it's all fine. You know what I mean? It's all fine. No one's above criticism or reproach. Now, just to let you know that the Community Garda information item is going to be coming up a little earlier today than normal, because the debate starts at 10, so that's going to be coming up between 9 and 10 in the not-too-distant future. Right, OK. John's on with me now. Hi, John.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
I'm good.
All right, OK. What are we talking about today? It's the derelict property grant. What's been your experience, John, or concerns, or what have you?
My query is quite simple, Greg, is that I've attended a few information meetings in relation to this scheme, and we've been told that the scheme is under review. It has been under review for the past year. I also made contact with Donegal County Council in relation to the scheme to find out what the outcome of the review is or was. So I've been told that the outcome of the review has been postponed twice. You know, I would just like to know what happened to the review. Are we going to get an outcome from the review?
Yeah, because I believe it was in June that the review concluded. Yeah. And obviously there's lots of people that are deciding whether to progress with it. Is there going to be, you know, some sort of a stage payment situation? Is it going to be increased? You know, because if you start drawing it down, you could be disadvantaged quite significantly. Can I ask, John, in what stage of the process of it are you? Are you considering applying for it, or are you?
No, I have applied and have been granted. I'm okay with the scheme. As I say, there are two issues as far as talking to a lot of people who are involved in the scheme are concerned. Two main issues. One you mentioned is the drawdown, which would be a great help if it was drawn down in phases. And the second main issue, is the drawdown of the scheme and the time frame.
Yeah, because it's, what is it, currently 13 months?
It's currently 13 months, and the council officials told us that they were hoping to get an extension to 18 months, which would be a big help.
In relation to that, John, because there's a clock, at some point a clock starts ticking, right, and it's from that date that you have the 13 months. Because you've gone as far as you have into the process, are you on the clock now?
The clock starts ticking from the moment you get the confirmation letter.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you take all sorts of things into consideration, like weather, getting people to work, getting people to do the jobs. All that there has to be taken into consideration. The weather was a big factor this year. So, you know, the 18 months would be a big bonus. That would be a big bonus to get increased to 18 months.
In relation to the amount, I presume, you know, was increased previously, right? So there is scope potentially in a review to increase the amount, because it is incredibly good value for the state. They are delivering a unit of property either straight onto the rental market or as a principal residence for the applicant, okay? So they're delivering housing for under 100 grand per unit effectively, which I think represents great value. But at the same time, they could increase the grant levels. Do you think people are maybe delaying and waiting to see if there's more money available in case there's another retrospective element to it and they could miss out money on this scheme? Do you think that's also holding things back?
Well, absolutely. As I say, from early summer at the information meetings, we were told that the scheme was going to be reviewed. So naturally, people may well wait to see, as you say, would it be retrospective if it was reviewed. The 70,000 that's available for derelict properties is very good. There's no doubt about that. But it's still going to take a lot of money to complete the project. 70,000 is not going to complete the project. Mm. You know,
and I think also, John, what would be helpful if there was a drawdown, if there were site inspections, you know, maybe three site inspections, because if it were me, and I'd love to be in the position, but if it were me, I'd be slightly concerned that the final inspection, they could call around and go, oh, right, okay, this isn't quite what we thought you were going to do. I'm afraid you can't progress you on the scheme, and you could be on the hook for, I don't know, a bridging loan from a credit union or a bank or what have you. Is that another concern that you might have?
Of course, that's a concern. You start from the word go after you get the letter. You do things as you hope according to the plan that's been laid out for you. As you rightly say, somebody could come along at some stage then towards the end and say, oh, no, sorry, you've made a mistake there. You can't, we can't pay out on that. It's highly unlikely, because I would have to say that the council officials and the people involved in the scheme are more than helpful when you contact them. Mm. You have to say that.
Yeah, and they've more got a lot of contact, because I believe Donegal is one of, if not the highest applicants, a number of applications to this scheme as well. So it's proved very, very popular here. And I think most of the properties are probably in rural parts of the county. So you hope that it's breathing, you know, new life into communities or what have you. As I say, you know, it seems like a really good scheme to me, but we need to find this information out. Now, what I'll try and do, John, and I know you sort of referenced the candidates, I'm not sure they have the answers. Is this tied up in the election? In other words, would it be the new government that would progress this, or is that process ongoing? I'll try and find that out, and I'll put it to the candidates off air, if not on air. But I think we need to find out if this is caught up in the change of administration potentially, or if an announcement is imminent.
I think that would be excellent, Greg, because I think the fear that everyone has is, well, once the election's over, we'll not hear any more about the scheme. Mm. You know, that's the Hopefully that won't be the case, but it would be great if you could find out where the scheme's at, where the review's at. We know where the scheme's at, but where this promised review is at, you know, could somebody, could it be made public?
Yeah, I would guess the council are waiting on that as well. Not the council, but the officials that are involved in this in Donegal themselves. They want to know what's happening. Okay.
They are.
Yeah, exactly. They need to know what's going on. We'll leave that with us. We'll try and find out that information, and we'll publish it. And hopefully you'll be listening, or if you give us a call back, we'll tell you if there's any updates.
Appreciate the call.
All right. And, of course, it's also well pointed out there's a bit of they're very easy to work with, I understand, in Donegal, in that if the house is weatherproof, you know, it's got a working bathroom, kitchen and somewhere to sleep, you know, that's deemed to be finished as opposed to, you know, bells and whistles and everything. But anyway, all right, listen, thanks so much.
The people administering the scheme in Donegal County Council have been excellent. That's my experience.
All right, take care of yourself. Thanks so much indeed. Hi, Greg. What no one talks about is the pay in this country, says a listener. I worked this weekend because we were under pressure to get a job finished. I paid €800 in tax. My mates are earning much more than me on a regular basis, not paying half of that in Australia. In Australia, you can earn money in half the time it takes here. There is a concern that, you know, is it worth working? Some people feel. I want to say a thank you to a man called Ollie who left in my money that was left in the ATM dispenser back into the bank along with a receipt. There are still good people out there, and I'm grateful to Ollie. Of course there are. Now, just to remind you that coming up after 10 o'clock, it's our second general election debate. Our panel is Charlie McConnell Logue, Padraig McLaughlin, Charlie McConnell Logue of Fianna Fáil, of course, outgoing minister, Padraig McLaughlin of Sinn Féin, Charles Ward, the 100% Redress Party, Vincent Bradley, independent, Carol Gallagher, People Before Profit, unable to attend because of work commitments, and Nikki Bradley of Fine Gael was due to attend but withdrew. She's meeting or canvassing with outgoing minister Helen McEntee. And just to let you know, tomorrow there is a third and final debate, and then on Saturday we'll have full extensive coverage of the cant from early on in the morning. We're going to have an early start, I think probably 9 o'clock we're going to be on air, because things, information will start coming thick and fast, so stay tuned for that. And also on Thursday morning, actually, by the way, this is an interesting one. On Thursday morning, John McAteer of the Tyrconnell Tribune will be joining us to run through the findings of their extensive poll. It comes just on the eve of voting, and it should make for very interesting reading. It'll be interesting to see how it aligns with the TG Cahir poll. A lot's happened since then, so it's possible it'll pick up changes in people's sentiment, of course. Or it may not. I don't know the answer to that. The Tyrconnell Tribune out for many on Wednesday night, generally on Thursday, and we'll have John on the show Thursday morning to discuss the findings of that poll. Really looking forward to that, actually.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91-26025.
And we're joined in studio this morning by Garda Sergeant Charlene Anderson from the Buncrana Garda Station. Charlene, thank you so much for joining us. I do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg.
And we start with very sad news in relation to an update and an appeal in relation to that tragic fatal road crash, road traffic collision in Liscooley on the 22nd.
That's right, Greg. So on Friday the 22nd of November, Gardaí and Emergency Services attended the scene of a fatal road traffic collision in Liscooley on the N15. Now, the collision involving two vehicles occurred at approximately 10 p.m. Two male occupants in their 30s were fatally injured in one of the vehicles. A woman and a man, both in their 70s, in the second vehicle were taken to hospital for treatment of serious injuries. And I understand this morning that the male in this vehicle has sadly passed away. Now, a second woman in her 30s was treated for non-life-threatening injuries. So we're appealing for any witnesses, Greg, this morning to the collision to come forward. We're also appealing for any road users who may have dash cam footage, or anyone that was travelling in the area, or anyone that has any information in relation to this tragedy. We'd ask them to contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100.
Moving on now to a missing persons appeal, Charlene.
So Gardaí are seeking the public's assistance in tracing the whereabouts of a 15-year-old girl called Nicole Doyle. Nicole was reported missing from her home in Churchill in the early hours of Thursday, the 21st of November. Now, Nicole is described as being approximately 5 foot 1 in height and of a slim build with brown hair and blue eyes. Nicole was last seen wearing pink pyjamas and a green puffer coat. It is believed, however, that Nicole may have travelled to Dublin. So if anyone maybe has any information in relation to Nicole's whereabouts, we'd ask them to contact Gardaí in Milford on 915-3060. There is a picture of Nicole on the Gardaí Facebook page, and I understand there's also one on the Highland Radio page. So if anyone wants to have a look at that, they might maybe remember, may have seen Nicole somewhere, or indeed may have any information in relation to her whereabouts.
Yes, and it might be helpful also to share that image with friends and family in the Dublin area if in case it might reach her or people with information there. Right, now, information on a... recent burglary and theft incidents at Meeting House Street in Stranorlar.
That's correct, Greg. So we're investigating a number of incidents that occurred recently at a car wash premises at Meeting House Street in Stranorlar. The first of those incidents occurred on Saturday the 9th of November when a burglary occurred at the premises between the hours of 11 p.m. and midnight. Now, a number of items were stolen from an unsecured shed. The items stolen were a valeting machine, a 25-litre drum of tyre shine chemicals, a transformer box, a Honda power washer, a Karcher pressure washer and a Kensaw wet dry vacuum cleaner. Now, an attempt was made to force open the steel door of a second shed, but this attempt was unsuccessful. So we're interested in hearing from anyone who may have been in the area and, of course, anyone who may have dash cam footage. And then further to this, on Monday the 18th of November, between 5:30 p.m. and 8:45 a.m. on Tuesday the 19th of November, four signs were stolen from the same business premises. Two of the signs were stolen from the front of the business and two were stolen from the roadside on Meeting House Street in Stranorlar. Now, one of the signs is LED and the other three are red, white and blue in colour. So once again, our appeal this morning is to anyone who may have any relevant information in relation to either of those incidents to contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167 100. And of course, should anyone come across similar items for sale, maybe on a second-hand basis, over the coming weeks, we'd ask them just to contact Gardaí.
Okay. Now, theft of a car in Lifford next.
That's correct, Greg. So Gardaí and Lifford are investigating the theft of a car from the Health Centre car park in Lifford on Saturday the 23rd of November between 7:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. The car in question is a silver Kia Rio registration number 10SO1134. And our appeal this morning is if anyone has observed this vehicle on the road, if anyone was in the area at the time this incident occurred, and that's between 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. or anyone on the 23rd of November, or indeed if anyone has any information in relation to the vehicle, we'd ask them to contact us.
And the vehicle's still outstanding, is it?
It is,
reads,
yes,
like it is in any case. Okay, let's go to Burnfoot now and investigation into criminal damage.
That's correct. So, Gardaí, you're also investigating an incident of criminal damage that occurred at the premises at Main Street, Burnfoot, in the early hours of Friday, the 22nd of November. And it was approximately 2:20 a.m, Greg. A man who was dressed in dark clothing with his hood up walked past a number of vintage cars and opened the doors of them. Now, he broke the handle of one of the cars in his attempt to do so. And he also, I suppose, opened the handles of a number of cars which were parked along the street that night. And now we will say that he didn't take anything, but he just opened the doors as he walked along the footpath. I suppose, look, if anyone has any information, if anyone might have seen this man in the area that night, again, he didn't take anything from the vehicles, but he did just open all the doors as he was walking along.
Okay, strange behaviour.
Yes.
To Dunlow now.
To Dunlow. So Gardaí in Dunlow are investigating an incident of criminal damage, and this occurred at a business premises in Meanmore, Dunlow, between 10 p.m. on Friday the 22nd and 8 a.m. on Saturday the 23rd of November. Entry was gained to an unlocked exterior room to the rear of the premises. The glass of the interior door was smashed and a fire alarm box was also smashed, but once again, nothing was taken in relation to this particular incident. So we'd appeal to anyone who may have observed any suspicious activity, any vehicles in the area, and that's of Meanmore, Dunlow, to contact Gardaí in Milford on 915-3060.
Okay, now an incident in Convoy. What happened here?
Yes, Greg. So we've recently become aware of an incident that's circulating on social media, and it's an alleged suspicious approach to a child. Gardaí are investigating the incident that occurred, and it allegedly occurred at Findrum Convoy on Friday the 22nd of November at approximately 4:30 p.m. Now, as part of our investigation, we're appealing for the driver of a left-hand white Audi A6 that was in the area around that time to make contact with us. The car had a foreign registration plate. So we'd also appeal to any road users who who may have been in the area, anyone that has dash cam footage, or anyone, once again, that has any relevant information in relation to the incident, to contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167 100. And also the Garda confidential line is there, Greg, on 1800 666 111.
I don't know the circumstances of that. Obviously, it's been fully investigated, but presumably, if the person in question is listening also, it would be very much in their interest to make themselves known to Gardaí if anything needs to be cleared up.
That's correct, Greg. Okay.
Right, listen, thank you so very much for that. I really do appreciate your time, as always. That was and is Garda Charlene Anderson from the Buncrana Garda Station, and that was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 26th of November. In case you missed it, because it's on a little bit earlier, it will be available to rewatch on our Facebook page, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, and the Garda Síochána Facebook page a little later on, and available in hour one of the podcast, which will be live in the playback section of Highland Radio's website just after around about 12:30. We'll take a quick break. Much more coming up on the programme after these. Eddie is with me on the programme now. Hi, Eddie. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Greg.
Okay. This is one that parents and I suppose grandparents or anyone will sit up and take note of. What was the experience in your household? Is it your child?
No, it's my grandson.
Okay, what happened?
Basically, he was at school on Friday, and his homework wasn't done properly. Basically, we'll say it was 4 multiplied by 2 equals 8, and 3 plus 3 equals 6. He wrote down answer number 1, 8, answer number 2, 6. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't suitable. He was obviously supposed to write it out completely. Mm-hmm. And as punishment, and now I should say there were 4 children involved, all around the nine years of age or so. Mm-hmm. And there was 3 of them, there was 4 of them in total. 3 of them had the homework done, I think. The 4th, his mammy forgot to put his copybook into the bag, so he had no homework with him at all. So when they went outside for their lunch break, the half-hour lunch break, the 3 of them that had the homework done wrong were told to take their copybooks with them outside and sit at the bench and do it properly. And the 4th boy that hadn't the homework with him at all, he got a double punishment. He was put outside for his 15-minute break, and they had to complete their work outside. He just had to sit on the bench, and the other 3 had to do their work properly and then hand it in before they could be allowed to basically continue their lunch break if they had any time. Now, I think my grandson had it finished in 15 minutes, so he was up and he went back into the classroom and then came out and resumed the rest of his meal break. Now, on Friday, Greg, it was 2 degrees temperature. It was bitterly cold. There was weather warnings, as you are well aware of, in force all week for Ireland. Mm. And I just don't think it's proper at all.
And I suppose you're asking the question of others, do they agree with you? What side of it bothers you most? Is it the fact that, I mean, listen, they might have been outside already, but there's a big difference between running around and playing and sitting in the one position. So obviously, fundamentally, there is a difference there. So even if they were to be outside anyway, it's very different sitting stationary in that cold weather. But secondly, what was the reaction of other students? It feels quite, and maybe I'm getting soft in my old age, it would feel quite humiliating if you were sitting there as a 9-year-old doing homework on a bench and all your peers watching what you were at, if you know what I mean. I don't know, if maybe it's normal, or maybe, as I say, I'm getting soft in my old age. But what part of it bothers you the most, or all of it, or what?
Well, basically, Greg, I consider it as nothing short of cruelty. Mm. Cruelty and child abuse. And, I mean, there's a duty of care. I mean, we all have a duty of care and different lines of occupations. And there was no duty of care there. And as I say, I class it completely, simply, cruelty. Now, there were frozen stuff. The sleet was falling at the time. And the children didn't want to sit on the bench because it would got wet. Mm. So what they did was they put the copybooks on the bench and they knelt down on the ground. With the result that when they got up to their feet, the bottoms of their clothes were all wet. And there was one girl involved, and she put on her coat before she went out, but then she wanted to put her coat under her knees. So she put her coat under her knees, and she was absolutely foundered. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's barbaric. I mean, I class it. It's sadistic to think that you'll put children outside in them conditions. I wouldn't put my dog out in it.
No,
and that's
literally, I don't think you're saying that. As, you know, sometimes that's used as a phrase, but I think there's a lot of people quite literally wouldn't have put their dog out in that weather.
Not at all. My dog wouldn't go out in
it. Has there been any contact with the school?
Yes.
An excuse given or apology or standing by it?
There was an email sent to the school on Sunday night. Mm. And my daughter contacted the school on yesterday morning at 9:27 and said to bring this to the headmistress's attention immediately because this is a very serious incident. Incidentally, the child hasn't been at school yesterday and won't be until this matter is resolved.
Right.
But the email was sent at Sunday night. She made contact to make sure they received it at 9:27 yesterday, and she got a reply back from the school assistant or secretary, whatever her title would be, to say that she was aware of it, she was busy yesterday, and she would make contact with her today.
Mm. All right. Let's see what others think. I'd be very interested to see what the school has to say on this. Obviously, in the interests of fairness, we're not naming the school or the teacher, Eddie, and you've been very accommodating in relation to that. But leave it with us. As I say, I'm very interested to see what other mums and dads and granny and granddads think. And also, we'll see what the school has to say. For now, thank you.
Two of the parents have taken action. A third parent has confirmed it to my daughter to say that, yes, her daughter was outside as well. And the fourth parent hasn't engaged yet as such.
Understood. I get you. Okay, take care. Thank you. So what do you think about that? The child had done their homework, but not exactly how it should be formatted. Two other girls also had issues, and another boy had forgotten their homework. On Friday, they were put out into the yard and asked to sit in a bench, or told to sit in a bench, and do their homework during the break. You heard Eddie describe how that they didn't want to wet their backside, so there was a combination of kneeling and what have you. Trousers got wet, as you can imagine, and jackets and what have you. And another child on their own, which this is what I don't like, and I'd be worried how this impacts on people in the longer term, had to sit do this for two breaks. We're chasing this up. What do you think? Eddie's grandson is being withheld from school until such time as it's resolved. OTT, appropriate, inappropriate. I'm not trying to lead the conversation in any way, shape or form, just throwing it out there to see what you think. There's quite a bit of black ice out there, by the way. Should have mentioned this earlier on. I'm sure Marty did, for those of you listening into the breakfast show for road and weather updates. But the back road from Ballybuffet up towards the Roadhouse Bar is very slippy. It's like a sheet of glass. I came over Loch Salt this morning. It was fine. Bar where it gets really low and meets the road just outside Kilmacrenan, a sheet of ice there. I always am concerned or cautious when you come out in the morning and there's that clear ice on your car. You know, it's not frost whereby you can't see out the windscreen, what have you. It's that clear ice, and that always indicates to me a black ice problem, and that's what I had this morning, and black ice was present. McGrory's Brae in Ballybuffet, it's nearly finished. I can't believe that they never put a climbing lane in it. They dug 30 minutes, or 30 metres is it, on both sides of the road. The same happened in Coolboy, and they had to put in a climbing lane eventually. It's not good enough that our council realises things later. I think it might be a TII job, that, but I do appreciate your comment and a moment of correction on that. Another listener says, I'm just wondering, has anyone else been in the same situation? My husband was transferred from Letterkenny to Dublin for emergency heart surgery by ambulance, and we were assured after the surgery he'd be getting an ambulance back to Donegal. I've since learned today that he'll be getting discharged during the week and has been told he has to make his own way back to Donegal. Unfortunately, I don't drive and I have no way to Dublin to collect him, as he can't wear a seatbelt and was advised against using a bus. Top of that, what do you do in that situation? I don't know actually what the solution to that might be. Throw it out to the listeners and see what they have to say. I've also been asked to mention that Drumbo House Stranorlar was to be opened by the end of 2024. This is the third time I've been told it was opening. 5 years in March and nothing is happening. This one, I'm enraged to be told now it'll be opened March 2025. Very frustrating for people. I do understand that indeed. Just a further reminder for you that coming up after 10, and for those of you who are watching the live stream, Hunter, if you watch every day, of course, across our various platforms, either directly on our website in the Watch Live or through YouTube, Facebook, X and so on. We'll discontinue this stream at 10 and switch straight to a new stream because we're in a different part of the building, specifically for our two-hour general election debate. Our guests today, outgoing Minister Charlie McConnell of Fianna Fáil, Pádraig McLoughlin of Sinn Féin, Charles Ward of 100% Redress, and Vincent J. Bradley, Independent. Carol Gallagher, People for Profit, was invited, unable to attend, she says, due to work commitments. Nikki Bradley of Fine Gael was due to attend, but withdrew yesterday because Helen McEntee, I believe, is in the county and they're meeting or canvassing. I'm not privy to that information. But it's going to be a very interesting and potentially robust conversation on all the big issues. Of course, we'll be focusing on defective concrete, immigration, mental health services, the health services in general, and see whatever else comes up as well. Fisheries, of course, there are a couple of ARCA, all of them, I'm sure, have an interest in fisheries, but a couple of them portfolio interests in that as well. So we'll tease all of that out over the next hour. And as I say, you know, it's almost decision time. And it's not for me to preach or suggest what people do, but it would be great to see a real big turnout on Friday, whichever way you want to vote. It doesn't matter to me which way people vote. But I understand that some people are apathetic or maybe feel nothing will change. But it really gives us a mandate to have a problem with things, you know, and decisions that are being made if we've influenced who's making those decisions, if that makes sense. Now, a new All Ireland report on domestic sexual and gender-based violence has found the border has become a significant barrier to women who are trying to flee domestic violence. And in many cases, it's forced women and children back to abusive homes or into homelessness. Dr. Marie Hainsworth is manager of the Donegal Domestic Violence Service and joins us on the programme now. Thank you for your time as always, Marie. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you. And thank you for having me on.
Can you talk to us how the border becomes a barrier? And I suppose given your position, you know, you can sort of draw on real world experience. But why is it so problematic?
Well, I suppose, you know, because technically it's a different jurisdiction. So we come across all kinds of issues, like even if women might access or have family in the north, if they're not eligible to claim benefits or anything over there, maybe they, you know, they're living here, they can't suddenly go back. They can't access refuge accommodation over there because in Northern Ireland, the model is, well, a bit like here, it's tied into the local benefit system. So if you're eligible for benefits and for housing in one jurisdiction, you're not obviously eligible in a different one. So we encounter a lot of difficulties like that, which can be overcome, but it takes time. And that's not much good in an emergency situation, as you can imagine. The other big challenge that we're finding more and more is a lot of perpetrators do use the legal system. So things like child access, constantly bringing people back, you know, it depends which jurisdiction the children are officially resident in. There's a lot of stops to try and prevent maybe victims trying to reconnect with family members who may only be 20 minutes down the road. But because it's in Northern Ireland, perpetrators are going into court. They're putting travel bans on the kids. They're trying to stop them just being able to access supports and family in a different jurisdiction. So, you know, it is used a lot. Technically, we're still compliant with the Hague Convention, you know, so if somebody does just go to Northern Ireland, they can be brought back on the basis that they've left the jurisdiction again. So we've seen a lot of that. We've seen children removed from the mother's custody on the basis that she's being classed as a flight risk because she's a resident of Northern Ireland. Those kind of barriers just don't seem to be being, you know, acknowledged that this is part of what domestic abuse is about, that it's about looking for gaps in the system. It's about trying to play whatever hand they can find, you know. So until we cover those gaps, we're just kind of being complicit, really, in the abuse and the continuing harassment as people try to flee.
Yeah. And of course, this was all made worse by Brexit. Because we're reading about issues in terms of UK mechanisms being enforceable in the Republic And I've heard service providers describing it as a situation where they feel their hands are tied. Now, in the negotiations to Brexit, Brexit and post-Brexit, in certain areas, there have been great efforts to, you know, improve, you know, channels of communication or literal channels, you know, in terms of trade and other areas. Yet here we are in a very serious issue that primarily affects women, but not exclusively. And it's worsening the situation for, as I say, mostly women.
Yeah, and children. So, and the other area where there is a potential, I think, for cross-border collaboration is in refuge, because both jurisdictions are struggling to provide places. And some of the counties like Cavan, Monaghan, border areas where there isn't refuge accommodation either side of the border, it would make sense to have something that both jurisdictions could access that might be jointly funded. And that might overcome some of the issues, because it is along the border where you're more likely to find people having family members both sides, you know. So I think, you know, there's no creative thinking or thinking outside of the box when it comes to actual use of resources and planning either, you know. And I'm not sure we can blame Brexit for all of that.
No, no, for sure. No, but the, of course not. But the one implication of Brexit is that the EU doesn't recognise UK EU domestic protection orders. Now, in this instance, UK could be, you know, Strabane, and the Republic could be Lifford. So a woman or a man could get a protection order in Northern Ireland, cross the border, and that is not necessarily instantly recognised in the Republic. So they have no protections in the South until such time as they get a similar order in the Republic. It doesn't seem to be as much of an issue in reverse, but certainly it's going to be a real-world example, I think, Marie, in a border situation.
Yeah, and I know there is increased cooperation between, say, the PSNI and An Garda Síochána, but, yeah, so often you find women are having to go to court both sides of the border in order to be able to get the equivalent in the north as well as in the south. And then the other issue is often perpetrators will flee to the opposite jurisdiction. So how do you serve the order? So even if they get a safety order here on this side, and if he moves over the border, we are getting more in touch with, you know, kind of technology and being able to serve things through the likes of WhatsApp and stuff. But it's also been another barrier that's been used, you know, to prevent safety measures basically being able to be given out.
Yeah, and we're still in a situation where it's an increasing problem. Last year, just to remind listeners, almost 60,000 emergency calls were reported. Calls reporting domestic abuse were received by Gardaí. That's a call every 10 minutes. And of course, then there has been incredible violence directed towards women. 24 women murdered in Northern Ireland since 2020 to September 2024. 57 women have died violently between 2017 and 2023. This is an incredible amount of people. One is too many, but the statistics are so stark as you read them. And 63% of women were killed in their own homes. It's harrowing reading, Marie, and something we really need to... I know a lot of work is ongoing, don't get me wrong, but there's something needs to be done to improve the safety of women in this country.
There is, and I still go back to there's a lot we can learn from cases. You know, unfortunate incidents have happened, but we're still not taking them apart and looking at what actually happened, you know. And I think we need to be doing that more and more. It's no point just kind of documenting what happened and then filing it away. We need to be actively implementing that. We need to look at communications amongst different agencies. That's not happening in the best way that it can. And we need to look at sharing of information, understanding risk assessment. You know, there's a lot of agencies holding different bits of information about families, but when you put all of those bits of information together, you might end up with a very different picture and an understanding of what that family is going through. And that's not happening. We don't have any forum where we can share information around vulnerable adults, because there's no safeguarding legislation in this country. Mm-hmm. So we can do it when children are involved, but we can't do it when it's adults or adults at risk. And that's beyond a remit of just intellectual disabilities. We need to look at vulnerable adults in a much broader category than that. Mm-hmm. So we just, everybody's hands are tied in some ways. You know, people are moving around GDPR as best they can and trying to work together, but it's not enough. Like, it needs to be official. And certainly if Helen McAtee is in the county today, you know, that's an issue that could be raised with her.
Yeah, actually a very, very interesting point. We'll try and ensure it is. Dr. Marie Hainsworth, manager of the Donegal Domestic Violence Service, thank you very much for your time. We're heading towards the last part of the first hour of the show. Excuse me. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we have our second panel debate as we lead up to voting in the general election on Friday. If you're at home and if it suits you, you can watch it on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. If you've got a smart TV and you never used YouTube, generally speaking, all brands are different. If you press the home button, it looks like a house. If you press the home button, a list of apps will come up and you can scroll along to YouTube, or indeed there might be a YouTube shortcut on your remote control. You click into that and you click into the search bar and type Highland Radio, and we'll pop up there because there ain't too many of us called Highland Radio. So that's how you watch it on your smart TV. And the Fire Stick, if you're using your Fire Stick, you probably know your way around it and can easily navigate to the YouTube app. If you have a laptop or tablet, feel free to click onto our website and click the Watch Live section. I'm snorting and burping and everything. I don't know what's going wrong. On Facebook, we're on Highland Hub, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, and we're on the X platform at Highland Radio. And most of you will just sit in your car, sit at work or wherever you are and just listen to us on the radio. And you know what? That is great too, because that's the bread and butter. So we just really want to offer people alternatives. And the live stream is very useful because if you're hard of hearing, the apps do provide subtitles. They're not perfect all of the time, right? But they do provide subtitles. So it means that someone who has who is hearing impaired can follow current affairs. Isn't that important? I mean, that's inclusivity, isn't it? And that's what we're trying to achieve here on a day-to-day. Hi, Greg. Interesting to know what work is being done to support women from ethnic minorities, particularly travellers and Roma, who experience even greater challenges accessing domestic violence services when compared to the general population, as they describe. It is something that we've spoken about in the past on this programme, and the likes of Marie Hainsworth acutely aware of that. And they're not probably necessarily going to reach all groups through programmes like this, dependent on our listenership, if you get where I'm coming from. But they do other stuff in the community through GP surgeries and what have you to try and reach other people who may be in abusive relationships or situations. In relation to children being asked to go outside and do their homework, absolutely unacceptable as a form of punishment. Draconian stuff. I wouldn't have been doing it in the 90s when I was at school. Never heard the likes of it. Well, there you go. This is just awful what happened at the school. Yes, in my eyes, very inappropriate. We have heard of those dreaded stories that happened in schools in the 50s, 60s, etc. Very disturbing to hear. Another listening to Eddie on the radio, absolutely disgusting behaviour from the teacher in school. A sacking offence, in my opinion. Another, that was a disgraceful incident involving these children. Name and shame that school and teacher. Well, that's not what we can do on broadcast radio, of course. It's just simply not the way it can be done. Tell that man that was the best education your child will ever get. That comes in from Raymond. And I did anticipate some people, because some people believe we wrap our children in cotton wool too much. But I think for most, even if they share that view, they think this is a step too far. Excuse my language, but what a disgrace. That teacher should be sacked. They wouldn't get away with it if it was my child. That is abuse to the children. Where is the duty of care, dignity and respect for children? We aren't in the dark ages, they say. And there is the dignity side of it. That's what would any of it. I can speak as a father, right? It's, you know, just the idea, as Eddie was speaking, I was thinking if one of my boys sitting there and all the kids running around and kneeling down doing the homework out in -2 degrees, it would upset me. If it was my granddaughter, I would land at the school and have a chat with the teacher. It is not on in this day and age. The school should be named and shamed. I think just what Eddie and the family are doing is following perhaps what the best course of action is, i.e. a formal complaint via email and then following up from with phone calls. In regards to the caller, another example of paramad teachers letting it get to their heads. Absolutely unacceptable. The poor children. No child should be punished for making mistakes. It's a process of learning. Hi, Greg. Just heard your advert for Christmas Lotto raffle. It says limited to 600,000, payout 63 million, making one person a millionaire. To my calculations, that will take in 25 million at €25 per ticket. So it leaves 87 million made in profit for charity. This is an absolute rip-off for the people who are intended to buy a ticket. I'm one millionaire, which is great, but surely the payout is scandalous. It used to be €20 ticket, pure greed, another asset sold off by the state for a pittance. And I believe One of the biggest stakeholders is a Canadian pension company. That may have changed, but it was the case at one stage. A third of it goes to charity, or a little bit less than a third, prizes and profit. Prizes and profit, mostly profit, I think. Okay, we'll take a break. Stay with us. We'll end this stream if you're watching, and we'll be back with a new stream for our debates and more in the 9 till noon show after we take a break for the news and obituary notices. Stay right where you are.